two different people commented to me this week about how the media focused so much on bad news, neglecting to report much good news. And I suppose that nearly all of us have said or thought the same thing at one time or another, because it does sometimes seem that bad news gets the headlines. But in addition to the media reporting, I suspect that most of us can think of a person who personally tends to focus more on the bad news than the good news. The person who rarely has a good thing to say, who is unable often to find the positive in things. A person who has a tendency to get caught up in the negative, majoring on the bad news instead of the good news. Hence the title of my message this morning, Majoring on the Good News. I'm going to urge you this morning to defeat that potential barrier to your dreaming by majoring in your life on the greatest good news of all time, the resurrection. In the biblical record of the Easter story, we find bad news at the cross, but good news at the tomb. And we need to take that journey this morning from the bad news to the good news. It seems, first of all, that the dreams of Jesus' followers were crushed at the cross. They appeared to be crushed. Along with the crowd, you think back, Jesus' disciples longed for him to help them get out from underneath the heavy hand of Roman rule. And during the week before Jesus' death, it became clear that that was not Jesus' plan at all. Some of the crowds fell away because that wasn't what they wanted from Jesus. But Jesus' staunchest followers, including the disciples, they didn't give up on Jesus. They kept their dreams alive even during that last week of his life. Think about what the disciples had been through. They'd spent 3 years of their life with this man. They'd watched him perform miracles of healing. They'd listened to his teaching. They had discussed his teaching. They put their reputations on the line in following Jesus. Though they still worked for a living, they gave up some of their time, in fact, significant portions of their time, to spend time with this man, a very concentrated 3-year time period. They were sometimes confused by his methods. They sometimes didn't understand the things that he said. But they were convinced. They were convinced that this man indeed was the Son of God. They had made a tremendous investment of their lives in Jesus. But then things changed. All of a sudden, Jesus was arrested. And it was after something similar to what we just experienced. We experienced communion. Jesus held what we might call the first communion. We call it the Last Supper with his disciples. And almost immediately following, Jesus was arrested. And following Jesus' arrest, the religious leaders got together and they connived with the other authorities to have Jesus put to death. They incited the crowds against Jesus. And they wanted, enchanted, for Jesus to be put to death. They got their way. Jesus was nailed to a cross. And I can't help but believe that at that time, the disciples were just waiting for something spectacular to happen. Maybe a lightning bolt from out of the sky. Maybe Jesus himself would pop the nails off of his hand and reach out and pull that spike from his feet and take that crown of thorns off his head. They were just waiting for that to happen. But it didn't happen. The disciples watched as Jesus allowed all these things to take place, and he didn't do a single thing about it, as far as they could tell. They longed for a last-second rescue, but there was no rescue. Finally, they watched Jesus die. And those dreams that they had about Jesus and who he was and what he could do, that they had nurtured for 3 years with him, well, those dreams ended. And they didn't just end, they died. Those dreams were crucified with Christ on the cross. How could they deal with their loss? Well, the biblical record shows us that their dreams appear to be swallowed up in two things. First of all, in fear, and second of all, in sorrow for the disciples. And men, we have to admit here that it was the disciples that showed more fear than the ladies, so bear with me on that. The disciples were afraid. Fear was the operative word, the operative emotion in their minds. And what did the disciples do? Well, the disciples were lost without Christ. They'd counted on him for 3 years, and now he was gone, and now they didn't know what to do. While Jesus was alive, they didn't fear the authorities. But Jesus wasn't alive anymore. With Jesus out of the picture, they feared, and rightly so, they feared that the authorities would come after them because they'd been his followers. They had pushed some of the same ideas, some of the same teachings, and now they felt they were at risk. And frankly, they were at risk. We find these formerly staunch followers of Jesus Christ not so bold now. We find them cowering in an out-of-the-way place, trying to hide themselves from the authorities. They were afraid. Their dreams are no more. Some of the women, perhaps feeling a bit of fear, but not nearly so much as the other followers of Christ, some of the women, including Jesus' mother, had something else that was their primary emotion. That was emotion of sorrow. And out of that sorrow, the biblical picture is one of them coming to Christ's tomb, having prepared some special spices to embalm his body. And they came, I'm sure, with tears in their eyes. I'm sure they came with their minds clouded, being able to think of nothing else but the fact that this one that they had adored was no longer living. They harbored no delusions in their mind, I'm sure, that somehow Jesus' dream would remain alive. They were going simply to pay their respects to Christ. They were coming in sorrow. For Jesus' followers, whether it was the disciples or the women that followed him, the dream of a new kingdom, the dream that Christ had talked about, was dead. Completely dead. But the dreams were resurrected at the tomb. I'd like to read those verses again that John read for us a few moments ago. Matthew chapter 28. I've given you some of the background to these verses, and I'd like to read them again as we think about a resurrection not only of Jesus Christ, but everything that he stood for. Everything that the disciples and the other followers believed in. After the Sabbath, at dawn, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning. His clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him, they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He is risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you." So the woman hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." About these verses, there is everything to say, yet there is nothing to say. Everything to say because they tell us the greatest good news of all time. But yet nothing to say because there isn't anything to add. Once we have told the greatest good news, it's hard to add very much to that. We find the good news relayed to us very simply in Matthew's account. The women came to embalm Jesus' body. Jesus wasn't there, the tomb was empty. An angel gives the first announcement to a human being that Jesus Christ is no longer dead. Then the women meet Jesus, they worship him, and they're instructed to go tell his disciples that he really is alive. Go to Galilee, you'll find him there, you'll see him there. What about the dream? The Christ that inspired the dream couldn't even be held by death itself. Death itself wasn't strong enough to stop Jesus Christ and to stop the dream that he had to create a new kingdom. The dreams of the followers of Christ are now resurrected. And the disciples of Jesus Christ were never the same again. Perhaps one of the greatest evidences for the reality of the resurrection. Those men and women were not the same again. Their lives were turned upside down as they turned their world upside down. If you and I are serious about daring to dream God's dreams for us, it's essential that within our lives we major on the good news. That we know that while there is bad news in life, there is good news in Jesus Christ. And we can't forget either one. We could say, well, we'll forget about the bad news and we'll go only to the good news. But that would be foolish and that would avoid reality. We recognize there is bad news, but in addition to the bad news, there is good news. It is true, bad news sometimes seems to proliferate in our world. And it doesn't matter what media we're talking about, whether we're talking about TV or radio or print, electronic, whatever the media is, we're bombarded by bad news. We see, we're told about, it's analyzed for us ad nauseum, a shaky economy, a bit of a tumble recently in the financial markets, debate over a new healthcare policy and what that may mean for us, evidence of moral decay, evidence of the breakdown in the family. Crime is highlighted in news show after news show, page in the paper after page in the paper, radio broadcast after radio broadcast, robbery, rape, carjackings, murder. Those things are the stuff of which life is sometimes made for us because we are bombarded. War, impending war in many areas of our globe, it can be overwhelming. And it can be enough for us to want to go somewhere in hiding, just like the disciples did. They were afraid, and I'm afraid that we would have done the same thing that they did. But sometimes our bad news is so bad that we might want to hide. We might want to stop the world and actually get off and go somewhere else and get away from this mess. The bad news in our world does seem to be growing, both by degree and quantity. But it isn't just the world. Sometimes it's our own personal world. Sometimes our own personal life has more than its fair share of bad news. We have health concerns for ourselves and our family and our friends. We sometimes suffer the bad news and the pain of the death of a loved one, the loss of a job, unexpected bills to pay, strained or broken family relationships, never enough time to accomplish what we feel like we need and want to accomplish. Sometimes a feeling that our life is going nowhere, that our life doesn't amount to anything. I don't need to delineate the bad news in your life because you know the bad news in your life. You think about it an awful lot more than you ought to, just as I think about bad news in my life a whole lot more than I ought to. But it's there, and it is reality. So let's recognize it. And let's take another step. It may sound like more bad news, but the more bad news we have, the greater the good news when the good news comes. The second part of the bad news is this. Even those apparently things of apparently good news items in our lives may lead to bad news. What are the areas of good news in your life? What are the good things? Maybe it's that you enjoy your job, you have a good job, you have a home, family, friends, some material wealth, a hobby. What are those things that you enjoy that are good news about your life that make life pleasant? Think about those things and enjoy them. Do enjoy them, but ask a couple of very serious questions about them. What will last for a lifetime? Will those things that are good news in your life last for a lifetime? Now the answer is yes, some of them will. Some of them will last a lifetime, but many of them will not last a lifetime. The second question is, will they last for eternity? Will they matter for eternity? And all of a sudden, your list is shrinking very fast. There isn't much else left. And that may sound like bad news, but it leads us to better appreciate the good news. More and more people in our country seem to be thinking in short-term dreams rather than in long-term dreams. And the church is not exempt. What are you dreaming? What are you thinking about? What is your goal, or are your goals in life? Something that will last for eternity. Not something that will last just for a few days, a few months, a few years, even just for this lifetime. What will last? What will go on and on? None of those areas of good news that I mentioned a few moments ago carry any kind of a guarantee. Some of them will last for a lifetime, but there's no guarantee of that. And none of them probably have an eternal value. There's no guarantee of that. So this Resurrection Sunday, I urge you again, or for the first time, I urge you to give serious consideration to the idea that ultimately good news is found in Jesus Christ and resurrection and nowhere else. Does this mean that we forget about everything else? Do we forget about those people and things in our lives that bring us pleasure and that we enjoy? No. Does it mean that we should stop taking pleasure in those things? It absolutely does not mean that. It is, however, a matter of priorities being organized in the appropriate order. If Jesus has indeed been raised from the dead, he must be the highest priority in our lives, bar none. If Jesus has indeed been raised from the dead, we have the certainty that God has accepted his death on this cross in our place, because he raised him from the dead. That means that our sin, past, present, and future, can be forgiven on account of Christ. If Jesus has indeed been raised from the dead, we have the promise that one day too, even if we face death, we too will be resurrected based upon our accepting Jesus Christ as our personal Savior. So what does all that mean on a practical basis? You know, it's one thing for me to say, yes, Jesus needs to be a priority, but it's another thing to do that. And I can't tell you how to specifically do that in your life, but I hope I can provide a few guidelines to help you apply. First of all, there are some of you here this morning that aren't so sure whether or not Jesus was really resurrected. You're not so sure that Jesus Christ really does or ought to have a claim upon your life. I ask of you this morning only this, that you give a fair consideration to the claim for the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I would ask you, first of all, how else do you explain the transformation of Jesus' followers from men who were hiding in a room afraid of the authorities to men who then turned the world upside down? How do you explain that? There is no question that those disciples, those followers of Christ, believed that they'd seen Christ raised from the dead. There is no other explanation for their transformation in life. And if we dare say, well, they thought Jesus was raised from the dead, but he wasn't really, I would ask you, why did not the Roman authorities Why did not the religious leaders of the day produce Jesus' corpse to prove that it was a fraud? Well, you know, the disciples could be accused of stealing his body, except where were Jesus' disciples at the time Jesus was in the tomb? Well, they were hiding for fear of their lives. And I don't think anybody would accuse the women who were in sorrow from going to the tomb and stealing Jesus' body, because they certainly didn't do that. There are good reasons to believe that Jesus Christ was raised from the dead. It always comes down, the bottom line, to an item of faith and belief. But there are good reasons for us to have that faith and that belief. If you have your doubts, I would ask you to give the New Testament Gospels a fair reading. I would ask you to discuss your doubts with me. I would be glad to talk to you and perhaps recommend some additional reading. If Jesus Christ has been raised from the dead, it is the most significant event in all of human history since creation. Don't dismiss it without fair consideration. For most of you here this morning, that is not the issue. For most of you here this morning, you already believe that Jesus was raised from the dead. And you're asking the question, well, what does that mean for me? Well, it means in broad terms that the empty tomb is the backdrop against which I live all of my life. There is an illustration that I've shared with you some months or years ago in a previous sermon. As I come into Centerville going home on Route 29, I'm coming from a higher elevation down to a lower elevation. And as I'm looking out west, I can see the mountains in the background, 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 miles away, depending on which set of mountains they are. And I see those mountains in the background. Well, before me, I see the town of Centerville. I see the shopping centers. I see the homes. And I see them all against those mountains. And if I am too focused on life in Centerville, the shopping centers, the homes, the life people are living, the lives people are living, I will miss those mountains. I'll never see them. But if I am certain to look at those mountains, I'm reminded it's a bigger place than just Centerville. And I see the big picture. That is what we do when we make Jesus Christ the highest priority in our lives. We live our lives. We go to work. We have families. We do a lot of things in the background. We need to see the empty tomb. We may see an empty cross. We need to see that in front of us so that we don't lose our perspective. If you and I focus on the short term, it will regularly provide us with plenty of bad news. You already know that. I don't need to tell you that. Even the short-term good news can turn bad if we don't have that empty tomb to look at in the midst of our lives. But when we have that empty tomb in view, bad news no longer needs to be the controlling force or the controlling priority in our lives. We begin to live our lives, we begin to set goals with an eternal perspective, remembering the big picture, not the little picture only of life here in this life on earth. In fact, I firmly believe that once you have genuinely met the resurrected Jesus Christ, you can never again be satisfied with ordinary goals, with insignificant dreams. Because once you catch the big picture, you want to be part of that big picture. And you can't settle for the little and the small anymore. One guarantee in life, there will never be a loss for bad news in our world. Neither will you and I ever avoid periods of bad news in our personal lives. The only answer that will last for life and for eternity is the sure hope that is represented in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. In that view, against that backdrop, with that perspective, life really is worth living just because He lives.